welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at the radio show's page of the same website. And we also link to our guests. We'll give you that link in just a little bit as we get into the program. I have to say that, this is it's an opportunity, one of my favorite opportunities on this program over the last 10 years. And actually, I've been interviewing for nearly 40. In the last 10 years doing this program, my favorite interviews have been with the great knowledge base as well as compassion and understanding and storytelling, believe it or not, of rabbis. And my guest will certainly relate to that because he is a former rabbi. He is my guest. He's also the author of a novel he's put out. His name is Herb Fried, and Bashert, I believe, is the name of the novel. And Herb, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my very great pleasure to be with you, Richard. I'm so happy to be able to spend this time.
And if I may say, shalom.
Shalom to you as well. I appreciate that very much. To be perfectly honest, I was an ordained rabbi. I was ordained way back in 1962, I was a pulpit rabbi. That is to say, I had a congregation, a rather large congregation in New York, for 3 years. And then I left that and started to go into the theater, and I've went into making films. And I've been, for the past 35, nearly 40 years, I've been making feature films. I just retired, and now I've written this the novel, which is very much of a love story, which I'm happy to talk to you about.
Well, and I'm going to guess that when you left the pulpit after 3 years, some would say, tongue-in-cheek, maybe not so, there must have been hell to pay.
That's a wonderful allusion and very appropriate to bring in hell. For me, it was simply a matter of trying to find the way that I thought I could make the best contributions to life. I remember reading a poet, an Indian poet by the name of Tagore. And Tagore says at one place, God respects us when we work, but he loves us when we sing. Mm. And I felt, being in the rabbinate and trying to comfort the afflicted and preaching from the pulpit and teaching and just trying to keep a congregation together, that I wasn't singing. It just didn't give me the kind of internal pleasures that I wanted, so I felt I wasn't being faithful and honest, and so I left the rabbinate. And yes, there was hell to pay, because when you're in the pulpit, you create very profound relationships with all the people. You're part of all of their life cycles, the births, the deaths, the bar mitzvahs, the marriages, all of it. And so when you leave a congregation, it's heartbreaking for so many people who feel that their family is breaking asunder. So that was a difficult thing. But I got to tell you, making movies was a great kick for me, and it enabled me to spend 28 years with my wife, Marianne, who was a writer and a film editor. We worked together. I was the director, and she was the film editor. I would set up the scenes, the shots, and she would put it all together, find the music, find the pacing, find the way to make the story exciting. And so we had a glorious life. We traveled the world, made films everywhere, in Jamaica, and Paris, and Rome, and Israel, Guatemala. And so we had a great life that way. She passed away a few years ago. And quite frankly, she's very, very present in the book, Bashert.
Mm. I know, too, that, and this certainly is sort of a sidebar, a conversation that we certainly could have, and that is not only the finding of one's, as the term these days is, soulmate, can be quite an experience, but then losing that soulmate. And it's what I find so interesting for me anyway is that, and I'm in my second marriage, but my first marriage ended in divorce, sadly. And yet there are times when I sit, I'll be down at the beach and I'll be just kind of looking at the water and pondering, you know, gee, I wonder where would I be today if, you know, those kinds of things, you know, where's the alternate path, you know, the whole thing about time travel and alternate, you know, multiple alternate timelines and on and on and on. And just wondering, gee, I went, you know, I often, and I actually can say almost immediately, well, I wouldn't be standing here. Because I wouldn't probably would not have moved to Santa Barbara. And still, I'm very grateful for where I am. And at the same time, you know, you think about what isn't anymore. I mean, we had some wonderful times in that first marriage.
Of course you did. But there, the concept of the book, Bashert, which means preordained, it means meant to be, it mm-hmm. means, as you say, soulmate. And I believe, I've come to believe, that there is one soulmate for each of us in life. There are many unions, and there are many experiences that we have that are delightful, some beautiful, some extraordinary. But I do believe that we are determined to find that one person in our lives that with whom we can simply live a more exalted, a more perfect, a happier life. But the point that you made earlier about, you know, what happens when one of them dies, I mean, you know, it's one thing to find your soulmate and have a joyous life together, but you were not delivered from the same womb and at the same time, so you're not going to be burying or dying at the same time either.
Right.
So there will always be a someone who has to go on beyond that, and those are very difficult times. It's interesting, we got our first review, the book only came out on Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. so our first review was from another neighbor in San Diego, and the title of his article, his review, which I thought was really quite good, was Can Love Transcend Death? And that's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. And my own personal belief, and this is I deal with that too on the... If any of your readers get a chance to go to the website, there's a whole section there that I deal with, and it comes from the book about how with quantum mechanics, with a combination of that and faith in some of the religions and multiple universes, that there is in fact the possibility, and I believe the probability, that we can be rejoined. I do have that belief. I know it may sound strange, but I do believe it, and well, I think I can make a case for it.
Well, I can't help but interject from previous interviews, conversations I've had, and information that I've sort of gathered over the years. One in particular aspect, and this ties to what you're talking about, there's a concept called LBL, or Life Between Lives. Yep. It's hypnotherapy. It's from one particular place called the Newton Institute. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of case study work and so forth. And again, what I find interesting is that people such like this, and it actually falls under the category sort of Edgar Casey-esque, because there's a man who, a devout Christian, and yet continued to do the kind of work and, of course, the writings that were done, and yet still maintained this philosophical position that, you know, he would not waver from, and yet it's like he was pulled to do this. But this whole business of life between lives, and it's been stated that we are part, and now you and I are part of this cluster of, I'm going to call it entities or essences.
Ooh.
That when you and I pass into the next realm, and we're probably, I don't know this, but we're probably fairly close in age, maybe not. But nonetheless, you may still be in that other realm, or I may be there when you arrive, or when you there when I arrive. And we may have some kind of interaction because we are part of that cluster. Whereas there are going to be people who are elsewhere on the planet that we will never experience because they're not part of our cluster. Your late wife is part of that cluster, but you have that connection. But here's the thing I was going to say is, it's been stated that every person that you come in contact with in your lifetime, in this particular lifetime, was once at one time, and again, this is assuming you accept you know, reincarnation and past lives, was a brother or a sister at one time. Not necessarily mother, father, could have been also. But in other words, you have had relationships with these entities previously, whether it was in lives or that space between the lives. And I think about that with a dear friend of mine who passed away in our home with my second wife. Dear friend, and I still remember him passing, and I remember getting really, really angry one day. We were laying in bed mourning, and I just started yelling. How could you, you know? And I look back on the going, what in the hell was that all about? You know, but I will connect with that, the essence of who he was in that case, somewhere down the road here, and so. That, I think, kind of helps a little bit in not only maybe accepting that person's transition, as I like to refer to it, but also knowing that maybe I can still communicate in some fashion with him here and now, but that I will connect. He'll be there waiting, as many stories of heaven, you know, when we pass and we go to heaven, mm-hmm. we see the parents and the brothers and the sisters and so forth. They'll be there waiting to help us in our transition.
That's I got to tell you, Richard, I have found in you a soulmate. we are kindred spirits here. These are very strong beliefs that I hold, thinking this one little blog of mine that just appeared yesterday in the website talks about that particular subject. You know, it's just when death occurs and your anger sounds very very natural, very appropriate. You're angry at the terrible loss that you suddenly feel, but in the long range of things, in the larger perspective, there will be, I believe, a regathering, a reunion,
mm-hmm.
And that comes with a lot of faith. And I know that, you know, it's a difficult concept to explain to people who aren't prepared to hear it. But your comment about age, and I think I'm a little older than you, but I think as we grow older, we begin to have different views of life, of continuance, and of our faith. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found interesting through my life with Marion, who's extremely bright and well-known, and she was a follower of Ed Casey as well, through the various beliefs that she had from religious faiths and also quantum mechanics that she began to introduce me to, suddenly gave me this whole idea of, you know, how is it possible I could be walking down the street, and if I turn left, I'll find you, and if I turn right, I won't, but I'll find someone else. But then at another time, through on another street, in another multiple universe, I will find you. It's something that we unfortunately can't, at least I'm not capable of explaining it in great detail, what I found in just beginning to tap the very surface of quantum mechanics, how close it is to many of my earlier religious beliefs.
Well, first of all, let me touch upon the age issue because I can help to bridge that. I was 2 when you entered the rabbinical.
Yeah, well, I was quite an astute student, so at 3 I was okay. I was a little older than that when I entered rabbinical school.
Well, I will add to also what you have said in terms of turning left, turning right, and so forth. And my present wife and I have actually talked about this. Now, she and her ex-husband, you know, they lived here in Santa Barbara, and then he was in the military, so they moved to Germany, and they spent some time there, and they came back. And then they actually went up to Nevada City, where we actually vacationed here at the end of 2016. And she wanted to move there, and he said no, and he took her kicking and screaming to Phoenix, which is where I was living. Well, we have conversed about the time period in which she had lived in Phoenix up until we met, and some of the places that she had gone and when she had gone. And I said, you're kidding. Really? You were there then? So I began to formulate in my own mind this concept of the universe and its little, I'll call it its little game. And as it pertained to us, and it kind of went like this: we are at the Sun Dome, and we're experiencing a concert, what have you. And they are there, and the universe says, "All right, okay, bring them close together." No, wait, not now. And so a few months later, we're both at the same place, and the universe saying, "Okay, now let's bring them closer." No, wait, not yet. And they'll do this over and over and over again until the right moment arrives. And it's time for the connection.
Oh, that's I have absolute faith in that. And it happened, and I tell it in the story exactly the way it happened in my life, that I was a widower, and Marion was a divorcee. And she had divorced her first husband, who was a movie star. And she never wanted to go out and to the readings at the Writers Guild and all that kind of stuff. And she had a friend who said, "You've got to start getting out and meeting people. You can't just, end your life because you're divorced." So he said, "There's a screening at the Writers Guild. You must go." She said, "But I never go to those things." So she went. And I have a friend that I was working on a screenplay with an actor named Glenn Turman, a really wonderful actor. And we were putting together a project. And they said, "We have to go to this the reading of the screenplay." I said, "You're crazy. I write screenplays. Why do I want to go listen to somebody else's screenplay?" I said, "The idea is absurd." He said, "Well, we're going there because it's going to be the moderator is an actor that we wanted to play the lead in our film." He said, "Let's go there. There'll be a question and answer period. Tea and cookies and wine, and I'll get a chance to meet the actor, and we'll introduce him to our screenplay." So Marion and I both went to this place we never go, and it was a mob. There were 500 people there, and they were during the question and answer period. It was really quite brutal because it was filled with other writers, all of whom were very angry that someone else's screenplay was being read and theirs wasn't. And so they were really, really quite vicious in their comments. Mm. I didn't like that, so I decided to say something about it. And I said, I was just very quietly, "I'm sorry that you didn't get a chance to hear all the good things that I heard. And there were many in the screenplay, da da da." And I just kept talking and telling about some of the wonderful things that I thought I heard in that screenplay. After the meeting, there was this the tea and the cookies and the wine, and someone tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, "Are you the one who said this thing?" And I turned around and I saw the most beautiful woman I ever saw in my life, and I said, "Yes, I guess I am. I hope I didn't offend." She said, "I loved what you said and the way you said it." I said, "What was that?" She said, "Kindly." Mm. And the minute she used that word, I saw something in her eyes, and she looked at me, and we both knew at that moment, that we were both drawn to this place where neither of us ever go, or have ever gone, or since. But it was that meant to be. It was bashert.
Yeah.
And so that I'm not at all surprised that it happened with you.
Yeah, and even with my first wife, it was the same kind of thing. This to me is extraordinary, because now when we talk about soulmates, and I think that we should clarify this, because a lot of people automatically and exclusively interpret that as a partner for life, and it may be same sex, it may be opposite sex, but we interpret it as, this is the only one for me. Am I correct or incorrect in my assessment that we can have more than one soulmate in a lifetime?
I think I have to think it is absolutely possible. I think because, we were talking before about multiple universes, there can also be multiple lives or different formations of our lives. So I think any of those things are altogether possible. My own particular life experience leads me to believe that there's one, and that's actually taken from the Kabbalah as well. There's a section of the Jewish mystical a literature that talks about what God does for a living. You know, God has to make a living, too. He has to work. He works 6 days. What else has he got to do? It's what he tries. He spends his entire time, all the eons, trying to put together the right couple, the soulmates. I know that it's kind of just sort of literary fiction, but it's an interesting thought that the whole idea of finding just the right person, because when you are with that person, life is elevated. Life can be exalted. Life is different. Life is fuller. And I don't know, I can only explain it now that I'm have been alone for the past couple of years, and looking back at my years and my life, that the time that I spent, the 28 years that I spent together with my Bashert, were extraordinary. They're out of time, out of space, and as spiritual an event as anything I've ever experienced.
Well, I know that we're all looking for the connection. We're looking for the, you know, that person who will be there for us and with us. I have to say that in my experiences, especially with my present wife, did not plan on this. And I suppose, on the one hand, if I had known what was ahead, I might not have gone along, only because I didn't know, even as these events were happening, that how to handle them. But I was fortunate enough to have connected with enough people up to that point that I could get some support. My present wife, 2001, was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, went through a surgery and chemotherapy for 6 months, which I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
I know that. I know it well.
Yeah. And fortunately, since then, been free and clear of it. Matter of fact, what really gave me hope was a good friend of mine in another radio station. I was sharing him this, all of the stuff that was just going on. He says, "Hey, my mom had the same thing." Really? And how long did she last? He says, "Well, it's been 9 years, and she's still going strong." And that was back in 2001.
Well, so much for the decrees that are given to us. You know, you have so much time to live, so much time to do this. No one knows.
Exactly.
You have what you have.
Exactly.
And to rejoice in it. But that's dealing with illness is one of the more difficult things, as we both know.
Mm-hmm.
But you deal with it as you deal with everything else. But sometimes you have to raise yourself above what appears to be disastrous, and allow for the possibility that there can be important positive results from an experience. And even the experience of dealing with illness. And, I went through that. My first wife passed away of cancer, so I know what that was with all of the problems. But that was a different situation, and her attitude and my attitude was quite different. This time, when I was faced with another disease, lupus, which is what Marion had, I dealt with it differently. I didn't. Neither of us ever thought in terms of the end, because we both believed, without actually expressing it in these words, that there was a continuity. We felt it. We knew it. I mean, we didn't use cocaine or crack, but we would drink champagne on Saturday afternoons and dance on our balcony, and life was very light, very happy. And very full, and sometimes heavy, but very, very real and very full of exaltation. And so we experiencing that, we just couldn't imagine, and I still cannot imagine or believe that there is an end, that was the end. There's a difficult time of confusion, of pain, but you go through that as you go through everything else in life. And I do believe that there is that reunification.
And I agree with you there. I have to say that for my present wife and I, ours is made up a great deal of a lot of intensity that we knew from in a very early phase that that's what our relationship was just very, very intense. That's just the way it was. And there was no denying that. And it's been very good. I mean, it's been intense in all of the areas, not just in one in particular. They're very, very passionate in that regard. The funny thing about it is that I have always worked throughout my life to avoid drama and conflict. And yet...
You cannot.
No, you can't avoid it all. You can't avoid it all. At the same time, I don't want to generate it. You know? I mean, if I can avoid it by not generating it, by, but yet still being able to be true to myself and speak from my truth, as the phrase goes, wonderful. But... then there are those times when the passions, they kick in and you say things and then you have to go back and say, hey, look, I'm sorry. I was venting and I was upset and da, da, da. Just like when my dear friend passed away back in 2003 in our home back in Phoenix. I mean, we went through that together as well.
Of course, have to. That's as much a part of life as anything else. And there will be disagreements and there will be arguments and there will be times when you think that the other person just doesn't really understand what's in your heart. But you work through these things and you go through them because coming through the other end is so joyous and so delightful and so exciting that it's all worth the journey. It's all worth the journey.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. Like I said, I wouldn't be here in Santa Barbara enjoying a 20-minute walk to the beach. A walk to the beach from where I worked in Phoenix, 20 days. You know,
yes,
I'm not sure if that was to the Gulf of Mexico or to California, but either way, not appealing to me. If you've just joined us, and I hope you are enjoying our conversation here, Herb Fried is my guest, and Beshirt is the title of a novel that he has just recently written. It came out in February 2017, and we're talking about a lot of different things, relationships certainly, but we're also talking too about the connections that we make throughout our lives, and I have to say. Herb, that I love the idea and have had the experience of having, during periods of my life, I suppose I could say a soulmate. And the reason I say it in that context is because they came into my life. We were very close. We had a great relationship. I mean, there was a gentleman that I worked with back in Phoenix at a radio station. And when it was his time to leave, he was going to move to Colorado. We cried. I mean, you know, there that was the kind of connection we had. And we only knew each other like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months. But the relationship that we formed as colleagues, as coworkers, as friends, transcended so much, and you know, and I hated to see him go. We were having so much fun together, and then there's another gentleman who I worked with at another radio station. My office was set up to where I had a little studio in there, and he would come in, and the boss would give us scripts, and I'd have him voice everything up and edit it right there at my desk, which I, again, with the computer, I just think it's fantastic to be able to do that. But we just had such a blast creating stuff, and we still are in contact today, fortunately.
We are a communal species.
Yeah,
and our joy, our life comes from interacting with other people.
Yeah,
when I talk about Beshirt and about finding the one that was meant intended for you, finding your soulmate. So often people respond by saying yes, but that's 50% of the marriages dissolve in America, and so how do you then explain that? The only way to explain it is to say I can't explain that. It's highly individual, but it's the nature of our being, I believe, of our species to interact. And when we get a chance to work together, as I did with my wife, as you have with your coworkers, you get that feeling that there's more to you because it's being brought out of you than there would have been had you not had that experience. So the intermingling and the interactions between you and all these the people that you get to know and understand and like and love and appreciate is what exalts your life.
You know, and I remember and I really, I actually worked very hard to try to stay away from these kinds of self-serving constructs. And this is one of the reasons why I always disliked going into sales. Matter of fact, at one radio station, and I have not been formally trained in sales, in spite of the fact that I worked for a company here in Santa Barbara for about 10 or 11 months when I first moved here because I needed a place to work, I was so good at it that the last 3 months I spent in a special fishbowl area where people whose sales were at a certain level got to go in there. They were provided lunch, and they could stay there as long as they kept their sales up. And I was there for 3 months, and I was really good at this job, but I hated it. My father even said, you know, I know you're good at it because you could sell ice cubes to Eskimos.
But, you know, that ability is simply another way of saying you can look into someone's eye and understand where they're coming from and communicate with them. And the fact that you, well, look what you do every day. You know, you listen to people's stories and you draw it out of them. And you have that skill that not everybody has, but you have it. And other people have other skills, interpersonal skills, and those are the things that expand their lives. And that's what I keep suggesting people really have to do. Leaving the rabbinate, you know, was for me was a difficult choice, as you know, as we've talked about. But discovering all the things that I could find in the process of making films and traveling around the world. And meeting new people, different cultures, of different civilizations, you simply find a way to expand your life, and I think that's growth is what is so important. And the things that you discover about yourself, you discovering that you're a salesman. God, who would think that you this radio personality is a salesman? But by the same token, there's that aspect of it. Because a salesperson has something to exchange, he wants to give something, he wants to receive something, and so those are wonderful qualities. Well, and so even though it's not the function of sales, it's still a function of interpersonal experiences.
Well,
now,
but
that's
see,
what you're especially good at.
That's where I had a problem, though. See, the way I was trained, and it was a very brief training. I kept hearing this was the construct for sales as I was hearing it, that you don't go into, even if it's, especially if it's cold calling, going in saying, hi, I work for such and such radio station. I'd like to do some commercials and get you on the air. Here's a contract and let's sign a check and let's get this started. Now, I was taught that what you want to do is establish a relationship. My problem was, at the time, I would even use the word dishonest concept that, or maybe it's misrepresentation or something along those lines, that I'm going to establish a relationship with Herb Freed for the purposes of getting him to advertise on the radio station. That was the basis of the relationship. Not to get to know Herb, you know, not to understand where he's coming from and what his business is. That was what I was hearing. That may not have been what I was told, but that's what I was hearing. And I don't want any part of that. That doesn't sound integral to me. And then something keyed into me because it was like, okay, I'm establishing a relationship over money. And I was sharing this with somebody else recently in the last year or so. And they said, well, here's the thing. There is always that, shall we say, give and take in any relationship. And it isn't always about cash money. But there's always an exchange. And of course, I talk about this all the time in regards to giving and receiving. You can't have a giver without a receiver and vice versa. And that the universal law is that there is always an exchange. So that helped me to understand. I still don't care much for sales. But,
it's all part of this, this vast experience that we call life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's all part of it. I know precisely what you're saying because when I left the rabbinate, I wanted to become a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered was you can't just become a filmmaker because you don't know anything about film.
Right.
So how do you, you can tell stories. I used to tell wonderful stories and made some up and read others and wrote others. But you have to learn what the craft is. And my teacher, or the my mentor, was a man by the name of Dory Sherry. He was once the head of production at I think it was one of the major studios, mm-hmm. probably two of them. And he said, you know, the first thing you're going to have to learn is your craft. And nobody's going to give you a movie to direct. So where are you going to learn how to use camera, how to use angles, how to use editing, or what the whole process is about? And I said, I don't know. How am I going to learn that? He said, you take all the courses, and then you find access. You find a way to go in. And he said, the best thing for you to do is to go into television commercials. I said, why? I hate commercials. I hate the whole idea of advertising. Advertising is a lot of, you know, accepted lies. He says, no, there's that, but there's also the ability to communicate, and you have to learn how to do that. So I started to make commercials, and I first watched my first commercials, and I thought, why am I selling teletories? That's not what I want to do. I said, but then they said, but look at the way you create the images. Mm. Look at the way you're able to explain what it is that you're trying to do. So it's a process that you go through, the process I went through. And I think we all do. It doesn't mean that you're going to be a salesman for the rest of your life or ever.
Yeah.
But it means that you have to understand what the give and the take is.
Well, here's the real irony that I finally tapped into, because I voice commercials. I may even write a commercial or two. And I began to realize that the only difference between me and the quote-unquote salesman is that I'm not out there establishing that aspect of the relationship with that person or company, but I am maintaining that same relationship to serve the client, the advertiser, in such a way as to hopefully have them stay with us for an extended period of time. But more than that, I get to meet with the advertiser when it comes to maybe they're going to voice the commercial. So I get to coach them. I get to work with them. So I began to realize that my job really isn't that much different. It's probably more an extension of the salesman. So now I'm not just serving the advertiser. I'm serving the salesman too, because he's the one that brought this guy in. Now I have to maintain his reputation as well as my own. So, I mean, it started to snowball, and I began to realize that, you know what? You know, it's okay. And if you get another chance to go out there and do that kind of sales kind of thing, you're going to be okay. It's going to be fine.
Not only be fine, you will learn from it. You'll grow from it.
Yeah.
You know, we all have to do labor.
Yeah.
Even in the Garden of Eden.
True.
Because, you know, they were placed in the garden. In the Hebrew, it says to work the garden. So, you know, digging and pruning is not always fun. but finding a really beautiful piece of fruit from the is really can be enjoyable and can be delightful.
Yeah.
And so that's really the direction that you're going in. You have to be able to give something, and it's not always joyful and it's not always exciting. But it's part of the experience of life.
Absolutely.
You've got to dig and, you know, clear your garden, and you'll enjoy the fruits. And if you don't, you're not going to enjoy anything.
Exactly. Herb Fried is my guest. We're talking, again, a lot of things. He has a novel. It's been out since February 14th of 2017, Beshirt. And we're going to talk more here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We ask you to stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we're talking with Herb Fried. He has a novel out called Beshirt. It is available, has been, since February 14th of 2017. And Herb, where can people go? What is the website, the best website for them to go to? Not only to maybe get a copy, I'm sure through Amazon and the usual book outlets, but in terms to maybe find out more about you, and also to find out more about the kind of work that you're doing these days.
Well, Amazon is a good place to go, and just the name of the book is Beshirt, B-A-S-H-E-R-T, Beshirt, which is a Yiddish word, which means soulmate or your preordained lover.
Mm-hmm.
But I do recommend the website. The website is very simply HerbFried, HERBFRIED.com. HerbFried.com, and you'll see an awful lot of material and some of the wonderful reviews. One of the joys I have, by the way, Richard, is when I find in talking to people like you so many kindred spirits, and I find people who write reviews, and I say, my God, how did you know that was what I was talking about when I didn't even see it myself? So I strongly urge your readers to go to the website, take a look. It's very entertaining, it's very well done, and I'm delighted with the responses that we're getting from people.
Well, it's not so much just a delightful story, but it's very poignant, especially in this day and age when a combination of things are happening for people. One is obviously they want to find that person that will sort of complete them. And as a matter of fact, speaking of that, there was a movie, you probably know of this movie, that used a wonderful phrase. And my present wife and I saw this movie, and we kind of took it on for a period of time, kind of let it go after a while, but still it is appropriate. And you're going to know that. I think you're going to know the name of this movie if I put out this phrase. And it referred to these two individuals. The reference was made by one of them to the other. We're the split aparts.
Ooh. Whoa, what a wonderful title.
The movie was called The Butcher's Wife.
No.
Oh, it was, and I have to tell you, that was really a neat movie. It was just fabulous. And by the way, and in regards to movies, I love movies that have an ending that you don't anticipate. And one of the first ones that I saw that really grabbed me at the end, I'm going, you're kidding, really? Was, I think it was the Woody Allen film, Paris at Midnight.
Oh, yeah.
I loved the ending because I was actually figuring they were going to get back together again.
Yeah.
Didn't? And sorry, folks, spoiler alert, they didn't.
Well, the joy, quite frankly, of writing and of making movies is to find a way to surprise.
Yeah.
Because you know that everybody who's read the first few pages is going to say, I know how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't let them go there.
Yeah.
And that becomes all of the fun.
Well.
You know, this—it's realism, but it's a different kind of realism. It's almost a fictional realism. And so the whole book Bashert comes to a very, very, very surprising ending. Anybody who was able—if there is ever anybody who is able to anticipate how this book ends, I'll give them a dozen books to sell, to do whatever they want.
Well, I had an interview not too long ago with a woman who wrote a book about the meaning of dreaming, not the meaning of dreams, but the meaning of dreaming.
Oh.
And we discussed the whole concept from her, the philosophy that she has adopted, that this that we live in is just that. It is a dream. And that even as I'm sure your rabbinical education and experiences have taught you that things aren't just created out of nothingness. That at first there's the thought, and then there's the emotion to drive the thought into reality. And that if this is a dream, that we can change the course at any given moment if we choose to do so, which is part of the reason for this program, A New Paradigm, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, in terms of giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. That's why I'm also a very firm advocate of education in the broadest sense.
Oh.
If you don't know, and I did not even think about this until it happened in the fall of 2005, when I was told that the company that had just bought the radio station I was working for wasn't going to change the format and was going to keep everybody because it was profitable. And I knew they were lying because I had dealt with this kind of people before. February 28th of 2016 was my last day. They let everybody go, changed the format, and it opened up the door for my wife and I at that point to say, gee, what if we moved to Santa Barbara? Okay?
Uh-huh.
So we could have said no to that and said, okay, well, let's start tomorrow. We'll go out. We'll get the resumes written up, and we'll start. I'll start hitting the radio stations here in town, and you start, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And we just, and it was at that moment we realized, guess what? We got a different choice.
Not only did you have a different choice, you were led. You were led to this.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
It's the what I call, in Bashirt, the ending is what I call
Say that one time.
In other words, it's real, but it's magical.
Magical realism.
And there's no way to really explain it in any other way. Mm. And so I'm very much with you in the belief that just as you were guided to move into this where you are now, and the way we've been talking this time, I know why you're a success, because you're fascinating, you're interesting, and you're curious, and that makes a wonderful. But you wouldn't have had that if the change hadn't happened.
You know, that almost got me into trouble back in the late 80s. At the Christian radio station that I was working for at the time. I was there for 15 years, by the way. Greatest education I was ever paid for. And I interviewed a gentleman from Las Vegas who had an organization called CAMP, C-A-M-P, Christians and Muslims for Peace.
Oh.
And I interviewed the man, and I told him, okay, this is when it's going to air. And, of course, he was speaking in the area, in the valley at that time. And he went out to do a talk. And all of a sudden I got this call a few days later from this woman saying that we were being used of the devil, that he, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. And so I called him back and I said, what's going on with this woman? And he says, oh, yeah, this is a heckler who follows me from town to town, da-da-da-da-da. Well, my boss didn't like surprises. And so he says, I want to hear the interview. So I sent him the interview. This is a fundamentalist evangelical Christian radio station. And the first phone call I got from him after he listened to the interview, the first question he asked me was, are you Muslim?
Yes.
And I said, well, no, I'm just curious. And even to this day, I am curious about Islam. I am curious from the standpoint of wanting to understand. I'm not looking to convert. I just want to understand.
Of course.
What is the hullabaloo about?
Yes, the more we know, the more we can appreciate our own lives, the more directions we have are open to us, the more values we're able to understand and to appreciate. And we're a world made up of so many different components,
mm-hmm.
and the more we're able to understand of these components, the more glorious our life can be, which is what we're put on earth to do.
Yeah,
you know, to be the most we can possibly be, and you know, getting back to Bashert,
yes.
If you're lucky enough to have a soulmate with you, then you grow exponentially.
Is that one of those experiences that you just know that you know that this person is your soulmate? I mean, there's no sign and nothing pops up, you know.
You mentioned movies before. Let me just talk about The Godfather.
Ah.
There was one scene in Sicily when the protagonist is walking through the fields and he sees a woman and she sees him. And everybody looks at the two people and they say, uh-oh, this is the lightning bolt. In other words, these two Bashert people found one another at that moment.
Mm.
And they describe it as a lightning bolt. And, you know, you can describe it any way you wish.
Sure.
But when that happens, when you're able to find that experience with that one person, that immediately multiplies everything you were ever able to understand or to feel, that's a glorious event.
It truly is. It truly is. I know that. I've come across a lot of people in my conversations, and I can't even imagine. I guess the best way for me to do any kind of a tally of the number of people I've interviewed is look at my bookcase, see how many books I have up in there. Not to mention the containers, plastic containers of books that I have under the house.
There you go.
And it's got to be in the thousands, I'm sure. I mean, how can you not in 40 years, almost 40 years? But the thing that has struck me so profoundly, and I shared this many years ago, that one of the reasons that I really enjoy doing these programs is because it's like Christmas morning and opening up a present that you didn't open up during or leading up to Christmas as a child. You open it up and you get to see a whole new world. Theirs, And you get to see things that might work in yours. Not their whole world, but bits and pieces.
It's wonderful.
And hopefully there's that exchange in terms of, that you both get to say at each other's words, I never thought of that before. That's very, I'll think more about that.
That's wonderful. You see, these revelations of what life is all about.
Yeah.
And these words that I like to use, magical and real, magical realism.
Yeah.
That when it's magical, is it real? And if it's real, could it really be magical? And the answer is yes. Our lives are full of things, full of incidents like that.
Yeah.
And we've just the very things we've been talking about, which, by the way, has been a lovely, lovely event for me, talking to you, and I've really enjoyed it.
I think too of James Redfield's work in the Celestine Prophecy, where he talks about the connection that we make and the messages that we have for one another, and how we are doing a disservice both to ourselves and to the other person by not sharing those messages.
We dare not do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We dare not hide the truth, the reality. And the truth and the reality of our lives just comes out of what we say, what we think, and what we do. And hiding that, shielding that, is a sin.
Yeah. Herb Fried is my guest. His book is Beshirt, and it is a novel that we encourage you to check out. Go to herbfried.com. That's HERBFRIED.com, and check that out. Herb, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time out of your day. I know you're down in Los Angeles, but if you ever find yourself on the 101 and you're lost or you're just trying to get out of town, we'd love to have you in studio here in Santa Barbara to continue our conversation, for starters.
I'm going to take you up on that.
I would love to meet you in person.
It's been a wonderful hour for me. I've enjoyed it so much.
And I have three more questions for you before we wrap up.
Yes.
And again, I want to remind our listeners, it is herbfried.com. Please avail yourselves of that and take what resonates with you. As I have shared with our listeners many times, Herb, we lay out a smorgasbord. We're not asking you to eat everything. We're asking you to try different things and see if it resonates with you. If it doesn't, that's okay. There's a whole lot more, and we're going to bring you even more over the coming weeks, months, and years. First question is, who is Herb Fried?
I must tell you one thing I learned from Marion, that all fiction is biography, and all biography is fiction. So if you want to know who Herb Fried is, read the book.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I hope to have the kind of conversation that you and I have had through this book with kindred spirits. People that understand what I'm trying to say and that I can learn from, as I've learned from you today.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I stop at one of three. In other words, I'm the ancient mariner. I have a story that I must tell.
Well,
that's my purpose.
We will help you to do that by linking to your website and making this interview available to anyone who wants to listen. And again, Herb, we thank you so much for sharing your time and your story. Beshirt, Beshirt is a novel by Herb Fried. HerbFried.com is the website. And we thank you for listening. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.